Walt Disney Presents The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad.
Ichabod and Mr. Toad. Ichabod.
Boom, 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 boom.
Ichabod and Mr. Toad. Ichabod, Ichabod. Ichabod and Mr. Toad.
A nighttime view shows a window trimmed with vines. A light from within illuminates a stained glass image depicting a candle next to a book. Our view closes in on the window, and we enter a room furnished with a full bookcase.
If you were asked to choose the most fabulous character in English literature, who would it be?
We scan a row of books, surveying the titles.
Robin Hood, King Arthur, Becky Sharp, Sherlock Holmes, Oliver Twist, perhaps. Well, any one of them would be an excellent choice. Still, for the most fabulous character of all, I would nominate a Toad. J. Thaddeus Toad, Esquire. Have you never met him? You'll find his story in this delightful little book, The Wind and the Willows. Toad, you might say, was the one disturbing element. Incurable adventurer, mad, reckless, tried everything, positive mania for fads, and he never counted the cost.
We view the book's pages.
Had a host of fair weather friends, of course, but there were only three who had his best interests at heart.
The pages show cartoon animals.
One was a badger, Mac Badger. And then there was a water rat, a bit stuffy perhaps, but really a fine fellow. And a mole. Gentle creature, kind and sympathetic.
The mole rows a boat toward a cottage.
They all made their homes in a quaint little community along a riverbank. Now, on that particular day, Mole was in a hurry because...
Inside, Rat frowns at a clock.
Oh, yes, of course, because he was late for tea. A regrettable habit still. Rat had more or less learned to put up with it, and so, as usual, sorry, Rat, says Mole. Quite all right, says Rat. Two lumps, if you please, says Mole. And then, just as they were getting comfortably settled...
Rat opens the door. A man hands him a letter.
Oh?
Special delivery, Mr. Rat.
Thank you, Postman.
How's everything on the river today, sir?
Dashed quiet, as usual, thank you. Mole, listen to this. Dear Rat, you and Mole must come to Toad Hall at once. Urgent, A. McBadger.
Now, Rat was certain Toad was making trouble again. Well, the answer to that lay just around the bend, at Toad Hall, the ancestral home of J. Thaddeus himself. This impressive structure, by the way, was by all odds the finest home on the river. The animals were tremendously proud of it. They felt it gave the whole community an air of respectability. To lose Toad Hall was, of course, unthinkable, and yet it was no secret that Toad's costly follies had brought him to the brink of bankruptcy. So as a last resort, McBadger had volunteered to take over and put Toad's house in order.
McBadger works in a study.
Smashed fence. 2 guineas.
He glances off, then reads another bill for damage to lamppost.
Damage, lamppost. 4 pun 6.
McBadger writes in his ledger. He looks over, then grabs another bill.
Destruction or hen house? Come on, figure what all this hoopoe.
McBadger goes to the front door. A crowd of men hold papers.
I will not be put off.
Silence!
I wish here
my passport.
I want my
money. Silence! You get your money in due course. Now, go along with you. I'll pay no more the day.
He slumps against the closed door.
Why did Ephra assume the responsibility of looking after me?
Och! Didn't I tell you?
He finds Rat and Mole at the door.
It's you, Rat. And Mole, too. Thank goodness, lads. You've come at last.
They help McBadger to the study.
Poor McBadger. He'd reached the end of his rope, for as he said himself...
Practically a nervous wreck.
I say, McBadger, what seems to be the trouble?
Summat's got to be done about Todd. This time he's going too far.
But he promised us.
Promises, huh? What good are his promises when these wild manias take him?
Now look, you're his closest friends. Are you not?
Yes.
Very dear friend.
Then, lads, you got to find Todd and stop him.
What's he doing?
He's got a new mania. He's rampaging about the county in a canary yellow gypsy cart with a horse named Cyril.
A horse pulls a cart through the countryside. Toad holds the reins.
Are we on our way to Nottingham, for Brittingham, for Buckingham, for any hammy hamlet by the sea? No! Are we on our way to Devonshire, to Lancashire, or Worcestershire? I'm not so sure, we'll have to wait and see. No! Are we on our way to Dover, or flying merrily over the jolly old road that goes to Plymouth? Oh, no! We're merrily, 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 merrily on our way to nowhere! We're always in a hurry. We have no time to stall. We've got to be there, we've got to be there. Where we can be called.
They leap into a river.
We're merrily, 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 merrily on our way. And we may be going to Delta, to Lancashire, to Worcestershire. We're not so sure, but what do we care? We're only sure we've got to be there.
Rat and Mole stride down the road. Cyril and Toad crash through a line of laundry in a greenhouse. Rat and Mole wave, then cross their arms. Cyril stops.
Hello, you fellas. You're the very animals I was coming to see. Come along, hop up here, and we'll go for a jolly ride. The open road, the dusty highway. Come, I'll show you the world. Travel. Change! Excitement! Ha, ha, ha!
Toad looks at Cyril.
How stupid of me! I want you fellows to meet my noble steed, Cyril.
Aye, that's me. A bit of a trotter, a bit of a rotter. How do you do, how do you do,
how do you do?
Rat and Mole compose themselves.
How do you do?
Say, Governor, your friends seem to be a bit on the stuffy side.
What? Toad, we want to have a talk with you.
Oh, a visit. Splendid.
Toad, this is serious. You've got to give up that horse and cart.
Hey, but my dear Ratty, this is my career. Surely you can't mean...
I do mean it. You've got to stop this foolishness. No, you must.
No, I won't do it.
Your reckless behavior is giving us animals a
penalty.
You're fast becoming a menace to society.
Toad covers and uncovers his ears.
And as for that horse, no good can ever come from getting about with such a fast and irresponsible beast.
Cyril covers his ears.
Get him, Mole.
Come down, Toading. Stop it. Let me go!
Toad's pants come off.
Giddy up, Cyril! Giddy up!
They ride away.
It's no use! You'll never get me to give this up! Whee! Tally-ho! Yoink!
Staring off, Cyril grinds to a halt.
Hey!
Two men drive a car up the road toward them.
Gad! Yeah. What is it? Lummy, Governor! It's a motor car.
Motor car?
The vehicle zooms by in a plume of smoke. Cyril leaps out of the way and smashes the cart. Toad lies in the road, watching the car drive away. He wears a smile.
A motor car. Gad, what have I been missing?
Toad's eyes glow. Bouncing, he imitates a sputtering car.
Honk, 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 Ratty, honk. It isn't. He hasn't.
It is, and he has. A new mania. Motor mania.
Toad bumps them.
Mania. That's it. That's what it was. A positive mania. No telling where it would end, either. Might linger for months. And with Toad Hall at stake, well, Rat and Mole had no choice. There was only one thing to do. Lock the poor chap in his chambers and keep him there until the poison worked out of his system.
At Toad Hall, Rat and Mole cling to Toad as he dashes up the stairs. In a bedroom, they dress Toad in pajamas.
Hold it, Moley!
They toss him to the pillow. Rat pours water on Toad's head. The steam rises.
That's better.
And you can't escape, you know. Simply no use trying.
Leaving, they close the door. In the hall, Rat takes the door's key.
Let me out of here! Open up! Open up, I say! Please, Ratty Moley, open the door!
Now, of course, playing jailer to one's dearest friend wasn't exactly a pleasant situation. In fact, Moley weakened right at the start and wanted to call it quits. But Ratty said no, definitely not. This time, they must be firm.
Mole assumes a determined expression. He winces.
After all, it wasn't just a matter of saving Toad from himself. It was MacBadger to consider, and Toad Hall and all that it stood for.
Nighttime, outside Toad's bedroom window.
Now, there was only one thing wrong with Ratty's cure for Toad's motor mania. It didn't work.
Toad climbs out.
You see, Toad was far too clever, and at the moment, completely mad. He was determined to get a motor car, even if he had to beg, borrow, or...
Newspaper headlines read, Toad arrested, caught in stolen car. In a courtroom, a lawyer in a wig reads a statement.
Case in His Majesty's Court of Assizes, most defendant, J. Thaddeus Toad, Toad Hall, Riverbank, and Doodle Bunt, Max Morton, 30, 24th day of August, set forth in the following brief.
From the dock, Toad spots Rat, Mole, and MacBadger.
Accuses J. Thaddeus Toad of stealing a motor car, driving said stolen vehicle in a reckless manner on the public high road, to the endangerment of sundry subjects of His Majesty, their life and limbs.
Counsel for the Crown, proceed with the case.
My Lord, I call as first Crown witnesses, Mr. Rat and Mr. Mole.
Mole and Rat walk by the dock. Smiling, Mole waves at Toad. Toad winks and smiles back. At the witness stand, Rat and Mole climb up a stool and sit on a thick, open book.
Is it true that you had the accused locked in his own house because he threatened to get a motor car?
Mole tumbles off the stool.
Did you or did you not have him locked up?
We did.
Thank you! That is all!
Mole sticks out his tongue.
Next witness.
Mr. Angus MacBadger.
He sits in the witness stand.
As trustee of the Toad Estate, you knew of the prisoner's mania for motor cars? And due to his reckless extravagance, you cut off his allowance. Then he was, to the best of your knowledge, without funds. That is all. Thank you. Gentlemen of the jury, the Crown rests.
Counsel for the defense will present his case.
Toad puts on a monocle.
My lad, with the court's indulgence...
He dusts a wig.
I rise prepared to plead my own defense.
Mole claps. Toad bows.
Moley, stop it. Gentlemen of the jury, I call as my first witness Cyril Proudbottom.
Cyril Proudbottom?
The horse gallops up to the witness stand.
Are you acquainted with the defendant, J. Thaddeus Toad?
Lord love it, don't you? Yes. He's one of the jolliest chaps I've ever run across. And simply tons of money.
Good fellow, eh? Throws it away. But he wasn't throwing it away that day. You heard Mr. MacBadger testify that his allowance was cut off. Then how did he get a motor car?
The only way a gentleman gets anything. The honest way.
And what is the honest way?
Ha-ha, I thought you wouldn't know that, Governor.
Your lordship, I...
The witness may testify in his own words.
Righto, Governor. Now, I'll give you the facts of the case. For when Toadie escaped from his boudoir,
He come heading straight for my place.
In a flashback.
Soon we was off down the highway, but hadn't gone far, I confess, when all of a sudden, with a rush and a roar,
a red car drives by.
Something passed like the London Express. It was big, it was red, it was beautiful. A motor car! A bit of all right. Toadie was transfixed with rapture. You could tell it was love at first sight. The motor pulled up to a tavern, wherein was located a bar. And we watched while some tough-looking weasels got out of that lovely red car.
The gang of weasels files into the tavern.
Now, weasels, I know, are deceitful and not to be trusted at all. But how could I know they'd stolen that car? I didn't have no crystal ball.
Toad sniffs exhaust.
And the governor, he's not one to dally. He made up his mind like a flash. He says, "Try it for size, my good Cyril, while I see what they'll take for it, cash." So into the tavern he saunters, where the barman was back at the bar. And he said, "Cheerio, tavern keeper. Who's the owner of that hot-looking car?"
The weasels hide under a table and aim weapons.
The barman, a codger named Winky, leaned over the bar and said, "Why?" The governor answered, "That car must be mine. Whatever the price is, I'll buy." But Toad found he hadn't no money. So he promptly offered a trade. The weasels appeared to be willing. In a moment, the bargain was made. Then Toadie drawed up a paper with almost incredible speed. And he called on old Winky, the barman, to pop over and witness the deed.
Winky signs the deed.
Now, the governor's not a bit stingy. He never does anything small. The weasels gave him the red motor car, and he gave the weasels Toad Hall.
MacBadger faints.
Traded Toad Hall. An estate worth £100,000. For a motor car. You expect me to believe that?
I don't expect you to believe anything. But fortunately, I can produce a witness. Call Mr. Winky.
Mr. Winky, Mr. Winky.
The barman traipses into the courthouse. Showing Winky to the witness stand, Toad winks at him, and the barman returns the gesture.
My lord, gentlemen, facing you in the witness box is a citizen of substance and standing, a man of unimpeachable honesty. Now, Mr. Winky, do you recall an incident that took place in your establishment last August the 12th that I was a party to?
Oh, yes, sir. That I do, sir.
Well, then, just tell the court what actually happened.
Well, Governor, you tried to sell me a stolen motor car.
That's to deliver a lie, you monkey-faced little robot.
Guards grab Toad.
I've been framed. Let me go. Help. Help.
News of Toad's disgrace rocked the nation. Seems the court was determined to make an example of him. Of course, Toad's friends tried to help him, but they were blocked at every turn. Why, they must have reopened the case at least a dozen times. Appeal to this court, that court, any court. But the decision stood. The case of J. Thaddeus Toad was closed.
Nighttime, carolers gather around a street lamppost. As snow gently falls, our view scans the city's rooftops.
Yes, once again it was a white Christmas. And once again the melodies of Yuletide hung sweet upon the winter's air. Hearts were gay and spirits high. Indeed, in all the city, there was but one spot untouched by the warmth of Christmas cheer. The Tower. Grim monument to despair. Cold, cruel, forbidding. And unfortunately, the abode of Toad for a good many Christmases yet to come.
In his cell, Toad cries over a puddle.
Poor Toad. Alone with the memories of his wasted life, what a fool he'd been. With many a pang, he recalled the kindly face of Angus McBadger and his sage advice so often scorned. A tear for Moley, too, for his loyalty, his sympathy, his understanding. And Toad wept for Rat and all those little lectures so often laughed at.
His foot chained to a metal ball, Toad slowly walks to a bed of straw.
Yes, within the dark confines of his miserable cell, a new Toad was born, a reformed Toad, a repentant Toad. In a flood of remorse, he vowed once and for all to forsake the follies of the Primrose Path. Never, never again would he give way to those mad, foolish manias that had brought him to this sorry end.
Toad lies on the metal ball. The cell door opens and a guard enters.
Being as it's Christmas, you're allowed a visitor. Your grandma's here.
Grandma? A Merry Christmas, Sonny. Granny wouldn't forget her little Toady boy.
Cyril!
The guard leaves. Toad weeps.
Oh, Cyril. Oh.
The horse pats Toad, then looks around.
Look, Christmas gift.
He holds a small dress and bonnet.
What is it?
Don't you get it? A disguise. Now, all you've got to do is just put on this nutty little costume and...
Alas, for good intentions. Toad was incurable. One whispered word and all his high resolve vanished in the mad whirl of this new adventure, this new mania. Escape!
Steam whistles blow and a policeman uses a phone.
Toad's escape!
Searchlights shine from the prison walls. As the searchlights scan the houses below, window lights switch on throughout the city. Police ride bikes down a misty street. Armed officers ride in a horse-drawn buggy. Wearing the disguise, Toad runs down an empty street. He desperately peers around a corner. Toad hides as many dogs run past. He looks around and runs into a snowy park. A policeman runs with a pack of dogs on leashes. Toad looks down a stone staircase, lifts his dress, and sneaks past it. A spotlight shines on him. Toad fearfully looks up at a policeman. The officer tips his hat.
Oh, good evening, ma'am.
Good evening to you, officer.
Toad walks away. His chain falls out of the dress.
Yeah. Oh, begging your pardon, me lady, but you...
Toad kicks the metal ball. He bounces down the stairs, and the ball crashes through a stone wall. An officer shines a flashlight on a train track.
I say, you fellows over there, you see him?
On the platform, an engineer squirts oil into a train engine. Nearby, Toad spots the locomotive and grins.
Gad, what perfectly ripping luck.
Trap Toad, would they? Aha! Never!
Toad steals the train and police rush over.
Here we go!
Well,
over there!
The officers hop onto another train and take off. On his train, Toad blows the whistle and joyfully sniffs the steam. The train continues chugging forward. Toad turns dials, then opens the furnace vent and smiles at the glowing light within. A spotlight shines on Toad and panic washes over his face. Chasing the train, the police shoot at it. Toad ducks as bullets hit the train's metal wall. The officers continue shooting. Shielded from gunfire, Toad shovels coal into the furnace with a grin. Toad waves to the pursuing train, then ducks as more bullets fly. He hides behind the metal wall.
Bang, bang, bang!
Toad peers ahead, spotting a bridge over a river. As the train reaches the bridge, he picks up his chain and flings himself into the water. Toad sinks to the bottom and both trains continue on.
Blockheads, let them scour the countryside. Once more, J. Thaddeus Toad had the last laugh.
A small fish swims to Toad and giggles. Toad stops laughing as he regards the fish. He reaches out of the water to a tree branch. He grabs a twig, but it breaks off. Frightened, Toad pulls on his chain, trying to lift the metal ball to no avail. Toad desperately reaches out of the water. As ripples disturb the surface, our view moves away, passing over the smooth river. We approach a home on the riverbank.
That same Christmas Eve, along the riverbank, the name of Toad was banned from conversation, lest the memory of his disgrace becloud the merriment of the season. And yet there was one home, at least, in which two loyal hearts still held the warmth of Christian charity.
Inside, Rat and Mole sit for dinner.
Bless this good food we are about to enjoy. Bless us, everyone. And bless poor Toad.
And may he get time off for good behavior.
Wind blows out their candles, and they look to the front door. Still wearing his disguise, Toad collapses.
Why? It's a poor old lady. Let's take her over by the fire.
They pick up Toad, and his metal ball falls on Rat's foot.
Toad! What are you doing here?
Well, I was just sort of...
Well, this is a Merry Christmas. But aren't you afraid of the police?
Afraid of the police? I, Toad, afraid of the police?
Open up! Open up, I say!
The police!
Toad scrambles to Rat.
Hide me! Hide me, Rat!
Sorry, Toad, but you owe a debt to society, and you've got to pay. No, let them in.
Toad picks up the metal ball and runs.
But Ratty, don't you think maybe...
Open the door!
Cowering, Mole obeys. MacBadger enters.
MacBadger!
Hi, lads. I've just made a very important discovery.
Toad Hall is ablaze with lights and in possession of Buck O'Weasels.
And the leader of the gang is none other than Mr.
Winky!
He holds the deed.
Hip, hip!
Winky kisses the paper.
And so you see, he did trade Toad Hall for the motor car. Then Toad was innocent all the time.
Aye, lads. And if he were only here right now...
Toad drops into his lap.
Toad!
Angus!
He hugs the badger.
Sorry, Toad. I misjudged you.
I hope someday you'll find it in your heart...
Tut, tut. Not another word. To err is human. To forgive...
Thaddeus! Not so fast. You're still guilty in the eyes of the law. To prove your innocence, we've got to get that paper away from Winky. No, I have a plan. We'll sneak in through the secret tunnel.
It was an excellent plan. Cunningly contrived, but extremely dangerous. It would work only if each did his part. There was no margin for error. The odds against them were tremendous, but the stakes were high.
The four friends travel in a rowboat. Mole holds a rifle. A weasel patrols a bridge with a bayonet.
But now steadies the word. One false move, and four lives hang in the balance.
The rowboat travels under the bridge.
Careful, lads. There's a guard.
Toad grabs the rifle.
I'll pop him off!
Stop!
Stop, Toad!
Don't shoot!
The rifle propels them away.
Who goes there?
The boat floats through a tunnel.
Whew. That was a close one. Trust Toad to start things off on the wrong foot. Well, no turning back now. Nothing for it but to push on. What new and greater perils lay ahead, no one could say. For with Toad already getting out of hand, anything could happen.
In an underground passage, MacBadger presses a button. The wall opens, revealing a secret door. The four friends peer into Toad Hall. They find the weasel sleeping throughout the room.
Oh, look. They're all asleep.
Nay, lads.
They're drunk. They've been hitting the bottle.
But where's Winky?
There he is.
Shh. He's got the paper on him. We'll have to climb up on the balcony.
They go to the staircase, sneaking past the sleeping weasels. Outside, the weasel guard discovers the tunnel. At Toad Hall, the group looks down from the balcony. Winky sleeps on a couch below. The deed sticks out of his jacket. McBadger whispers to the others. In the underground passage, the guard shines his light over the boat, then climbs a staircase. Tied to a line of bedsheets, Mole hangs from the balcony. Rat and McBadger gently lower the line. Toad watches nervously as Mole descends over Winky. Mole reaches for the deed. Winky snores, blowing away Mole's hat. Mole grabs the hat. Knitting his brow, he puts it back on. He stretches his hand toward the deed, just out of reach. He gestures to the others, and they lower him further. Mole lands on Winky's chest. Still asleep, the man rolls over with Mole gripped in his arm. Mole swallows nervously. In the passage, the weasel guard shines his lantern on the closed secret door. He discovers the button. On the couch, Mole reaches up and tickles Winky's ear. The gang leader rubs it, letting go of Mole, who grabs the deed. Mole cheerfully waves it to his friends. Smiling, they start pulling him up. The guard steps through the secret door and spots Mole holding the deed. The weasel throws a knife, cutting the line. Mole lands on Winky. Waking, the gang leader stares at Mole, who grabs the deed and runs away.
The piper! It's gone!
He slaps the weasels.
Hi! Get him, you blokes! Get him!
Mole runs, but crashes into a mirror. Looking dazed, Mole spots weasels chasing after him. He runs with the deed. A weasel snatches the paper. Rat slides down the banister and grabs the deed from the running weasel.
I beg your pardon.
Another weasel takes the deed and hits Rat. Mole grabs it. Winky swings a sword and Mole runs toward a weasel. Mole slides under his legs and the weasel hits Winky. Mole runs down a hallway and through a doorway, but turns back as many weasels chase him. They throw knives and axes. Mole taps a knife lying behind him. The weapons pin him to a door. Mole pulls himself off, bowling through the weasels and knocking them over.
Moley! Moley, over here!
Mole throws the deed as a paper airplane. It flies into the fireplace, but Toad sucks it into a bellow. A weasel tackles Toad, and McBadger releases the deed. It flies beneath a rug, and everyone dives under it. They crash into a piano. The paper plane flies out of the rug, and everyone chases it. On the balcony, Toad holds a stack of papers. A weasel chases the paper plane, but Mole knocks into him. Winky grabs the paper and finds it blank. Another paper plane soars past. Toad throws dozens more and weasels scramble to grab them.
There he is! Get him!
The weasels throw knives at Toad. He leaps to a chandelier and hangs by his feet. As McBadger spots two weasels running at him, Toad grabs him from above. Swinging on the chandelier, they grab Rat, then Mole. A flying axe cuts the chain. Toad, Rat, and McBadger crash against the secret door. Mole runs as weapons fly. An axe presses a button, and the door opens, bringing Toad, Rat, and McBadger into the hidden passage.
Where's Moley?
Mole continues running as knives slice his hat. McBadger presses the button. Mole trips over an axe and rolls through the door, spinning the others back into the mansion. Mole presses the button, and they switch again. The weasels close in. McBadger pulls Mole out through the door. It closes and the weasels crash. In the passage, the friends rush to the boat. McBadger wipes his face with his scarf.
Well, laddies, we saved our skins, but we did not get the deed.
Toad holds up the deed.
Well done, Thaddeus!
Hip, hip! Hooray!
A headline reads, Toad exonerated.
And so it was a happy ending after all. Of course, Toad's friends were dreadfully proud of him. And why not? He was a new Toad now, completely reformed. Through with gypsy carts and motor cars forever. And so, on this happiest of New Year's, a toast was in order.
To the new year! And to the new Toad!
They clink glasses. They shatter.
Hello, you fellows!
Outside, Toad flies a plane.
Come! I'll show you the world! Travel! Change! Excitement!
Toad knocks a statue.
And that was the fabulous Thaddeus Toad. But let's weigh our judgment carefully. We moles and rats and badgers, really now, don't we envy him a bit? I know I do. And so when we speak of fabulous characters, the most fabulous of all will always be, to me at least, the Master of Toad Hall.
The book slides back into the shelf. We move to another bookcase.
Oh, yes. Yeah, J. Thad was quite a lad. Speaking of fabulous characters, England has produced a bumper crop of them. But don't forget, over here in the colonies, we've managed to come up with a few of our own. How about Paul Bunyan, Pecos Bill, Johnny Appleseed, Black Bart, Davy Crockett, Daniel Boone, and, of course, the one and only Ichabod Crane.
A book slides out.
Old Icky, if you recall, was the country schoolmaster, dreamed up by Washington Irving. Oh, he had a way with the yarn, did Mr. Irving.
The page turns, revealing an old map of New York.
If we could but journey back to that remote period in American history when the city of Manhattan was but a market town, we would discover in the bosom of one of those spacious coves which indent the shores of the Hudson, the little village of Tarrytown. And just beyond, nestled deep in the low rolling hills, a sequestered glen. It's a quiet, peaceful place, and yet somehow foreboding. For it abounds in haunted spots, twilight tales, and local superstitions.
We move through a graveyard.
The best known story, however, concerns a certain itinerant schoolmaster who once frequented these parts. Indeed, some say his melancholy spirit still haunts the vicinity.
A shadow moves on a field.
The worthy pedagogue was described as a most unusual man. To see him striding along, one might well mistake him for some scarecrow eloped from a cornfield. He was tall, but exceedingly lank. His head was small and flat on top with a long snipe nose, so that it looked like a weathercock perched upon his spindle neck. Altogether, he was such an apparition as is seldom to be seen in broad daylight.
Reading a book, the lanky man strolls down a hill to a quaint village. In the village...
It was late one drowsy autumn afternoon when this strange figure first approached the tranquil little village of Sleepy Hollow.
Outside a shop.
As usual, there had forgathered at ye old schnooker and schnapp shoppy a group of rustic lads known as the Sleepy Hollow Boys.
Dogs run as a brawny man arrives on horseback.
Their self-appointed leader, one Brom Bones, was a burly, roistering blade, always ready for a fight or a problem.
Brom's horse startles a sleeping bald man. The Sleepy Hollow Boys laugh at the man.
And though Brom was much given to madcap pranks and practical jokes, still there was no malice in his mischief. Indeed, with his waggish humor and prodigious strength, Brom Bones was quite the hero of all the country round.
Brom fills mugs from a barrel. He slides the beverages to his friends. The horse licks its lips. Brom punches open the barrel, and the horse and dogs drink from it. Clinking mugs with the Sleepy Hollow Boys, Brom drinks his beverage. Through the glass bottom, Brom spots the lanky man approaching. He spits his drink.
Odds bodkins, gadzooks! Look at that old spook of spooks.
Horses cower. Villagers look through their windows as the lanky man strolls down the street.
Who's that coming down the street?
Are they shovels or are they feet?
Lean and lanky.
Skin and bone. With clothes a scarecrow would hate to own. Yet he has a certain air.
Debonair and devil may care. It's the new school. Master, what's his name?
Ichabod, Ichabod Crane.
Ichabod, what a name.
Kind of odd,
but nice just the same.
Funny pen, funny frame.
Ichabod opens a gate outside a bakery. A woman carrying pies passes through.
Maybe quaint, maybe odd, and maybe he ain't. Anyway, there's no complaint. From Ichabod, Ichabod Crane.
though the arrival of the pedagogue gave rise to mixed emotions, the townspeople all agreed they'd never seen anyone like Ichabod, Ichabod Crane.
In a schoolhouse, Ichabod walks with a book as he looks into a student's lunch basket.
The schoolroom became Ichabod's empire, over which, with lordly dignity, he held absolute sway.
He checks another basket, then steps to the front of the room.
Truth to say, Ichabod was a conscientious man. He never bore in mind the golden maxim, spare the rod and spoil the child. Still, he was careful to administer justice with discrimination. For it behooved him to keep on good terms with his pupils, especially if their mothers happened to be good cooks.
At a student's home, a woman serves a covered dish to Ichabod. He opens it, revealing a roasted turkey. At home, Ichabod writes in bed.
Who's the town's ladies' man?
Gets around like nobody can.
Has to be none other than Ichabod, Ichabod Crane.
Ichabod eats a turkey leg. He writes in his social calendar.
Thus, as time went by, it may be seen that the pedagogue got on tolerably enough. Moreover, Ichabod found divers ways to increase his slender income and, at the same time, awaken the cultural interests of the sleepy little village.
On a street, animals rest. The animals startle and alarmed villagers come outside. At Ichabod's home, three women do a vocal exercise. Playing piano, Ichabod sings with them.
Bum, 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 bum.
The women wear charmed looks. Outside, Brahm gestures for a dog to howl. Ichabod continues singing. With the howling dog, Brahm laughs. The women faint. Confused, Ichabod touches his neck and searches his coat.
Me, 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 me. It was inevitable that such a man as Ichabod would become an object of ridicule to Brahm Bones and his gang. And yet to Ichabod, these were small matters. Indeed, the schoolmaster possessed a remarkable equanimity, which remained quite undisturbed. Until that fateful day when his path was crossed by a woman.
A woman rides in a carriage.
A certain woman. Katrina Van Tassel, daughter and only child of old Baltus Van Tassel, the richest farmer in the county. She was a blooming lass, plump as a partridge, ripe, melting, and rosy-cheeked.
The village men notice Katrina. She blows a kiss. The men gather around her carriage. They spread out, and Katrina walks among them.
Once you have met that little coquette, Katrina, you won't forget Katrina. But nobody yet has ever upset Katrina. That cute coquette, Katrina. You can do more with Margaret or Helena.
The men prepare a picnic for Katrina.
Or Angelina. But Katrina will kiss and run to her romance's fun. With always another one to start.
Ichabod notices Katrina. She saunters to him, then leaves. Ichabod stares after her.
You've lost your heart.
Ichabod sits on a cake. Wearing an enamored expression, he places a roast turkey on his head, then eats his hat. In the schoolhouse, the students throw books and tear out pages. At Ichabod's podium, gloves hold a propped-up book. Not reading, Ichabod lounges out of the kids' view, wearing a dreamy look.
Now there was no doubt the fair Katrina was the richest prize in the countryside. And the schoolmaster, being an ambitious man, at once began to fill his mind with many sugared thoughts and hopeful suppositions.
Ichabod daydreams about Katrina.
Ah, Katrina, my love, who can resist your grace, your charm? And who can resist your father's farm?
A farm sits among large wheat fields.
Boy, what a setup. There's gold in them acres and that ain't hay.
Gold coins drop from the wheat and pile up on the ground.
Not to mention that lovely green stuff.
Green crops transform into dollar bills. Katrina wears a small smile.
Oh, Katrina, my sweet, my treasure. Treasure. That barn's a gold mine. How I'd love to hit the jackpot.
Gold spills out of the barn.
Dear Katrina, Papa's only child. Papa. Well, the old goat can't take it with him, and when he cuts out, that's where I cut in.
Ichabod wears Van Tassel's clothes.
Sweet Katrina, poor little rich girl. But don't worry, Katie. Ichabod will protect you. Ah, yes, Katrina, you've won me. I surrender.
Ichabod reaches for the vision of Katrina and pulls it closer. He kisses the vision.
And yet when you've met that little coquette Katrina,
Ichabod kisses a feather duster.
You've lost your heart.
In town, men follow Katrina.
Truth to say, every portal to Katrina's heart was jealously guarded by a host of rustic admirers. But Ichabod was confident he'd soon ride roughshod over these simple country bumpkins.
Brahm races into town on his horse.
The most formidable obstacle of all, however, the schoolmaster had failed to reckon with. That was the redoubtable Brahm Bones himself.
Noticing Brahm, the men drop Katrina's things and leave. She emerges from a shop.
Now, the ease with which Brahm cleared the field of rivals both piqued and provoked the fair Katrina.
Nearby, Ichabod brushes off his coat and puts a flower in his lapel.
And she often wished that some champion would appear and for once take the field openly against the boisterous Brahm.
Ichabod bows to Katrina and collects her belongings from the ground. Katrina glares at Brahm and smiles at Ichabod. Brahm watches her link arms with Ichabod and his mouth drops open. Ichabod and Katrina approach a puddle. Ichabod steps over it, takes off his coat, and lays it on the puddle. Brahm races over and pulls Katrina onto his horse. Mud drips from Ichabod as he sits in the puddle. Brahm picks up Katrina's belongings as she looks back at Ichabod. She pulls out a kerchief and tosses it to Ichabod. It lands on his long nose. Ichabod pulls it off with a smile, then watches Brahm race out of the village with Katrina. Ichabod pulls on his coat and hat.
Though a wiser man would have shrunk from the competition, love, they say, is blind. And Ichabod was aware only that Dame Fortune was at last thundering at his door.
Ichabod runs after Brahm and Katrina. On a road, the pair rides to Van Tassel's farm. Ichabod catches up and stops in front of Brahm's horse. A dust cloud hides them from view. Ichabod emerges from the cloud with Katrina. He tips his hat to her. She glances back at Brahm, who carries her belongings. Stepping close to Ichabod, Katrina gazes affectionately at him. Brahm gapes. Ichabod leads Katrina through a gate. Brahm runs after them and trips over the gate as Ichabod closes it. They look back at Brahm and the strewn belongings. Ichabod chuckles.
It's true that Brahm liked to joke as well as the next, but enough was too much.
Ichabod piles Katrina's belongings in Brahm's arms. He shoves a pink box under Brahm's chin and places a pillow on his head. Ichabod and Katrina enter the farmhouse. Looking frustrated, Brahm drops the belongings and stumbles over potatoes. He slides to the door. Ichabod shrugs and steps outside to get Katrina's things. As he collects potatoes, he pulls on Brahm's nose in a pile of flour. Brahm trembles and glowers at Ichabod. Ichabod covers Brahm's face with flour, then returns to the house. Brahm erupts out of the flour. At the door, Ichabod kisses Katrina's hand. She waves to him, then goes inside. Ichabod turns to leave, but ducks as Brahm reaches for him. Ichabod hurries inside and the door closes. Katrina spots him, and he discreetly pulls flowers from a vase to give her. Noticing Brahm peeking through a window, Katrina pulls Ichabod closer. She slides a flower into his lapel. Outside, Rom frantically pulls on the door. Inside, Ichabod kisses the flower. Rom wears a shocked expression.
It's time to carry the issue to open warfare. Why, he'd double that schoolmaster up and lay him on a shelf in his own schoolhouse.
Ichabod opens the top half of the door, slamming Brahm against the wall. He slides down, and Ichabod closes the door. Brahm pulls on the top half of the door as Ichabod slips out through the bottom.
But this, it seemed, was easier said than done.
As Ichabod tries to sneak off, Brahm lifts him up by his hair. Brahm pulls his arm back for a punch. Ichabod waves at Katrina in a window. Brahm gently pats Ichabod and smiles. Katrina closes the curtains and Brahm punches. His fist plows through a tree trunk. He yanks out his fist and spots Ichabod strolling away. Ichabod steps through the gate. Brahm charges at Ichabod, who bends over to pick up a horseshoe. Brahm leaps over him and falls into a well. Ichabod skips away.
No doubt of it. This was Ichabod's lucky day.
Ichabod tosses the horseshoe. It lands on Brahm's head as he climbs out. His view of Ichabod becomes blurred and doubled.
Now, it was evident the schoolmaster was indeed a man of hidden talents, a rival to be reckoned with. Still, wars are neither won nor lost at the first encounter. The high-flying pedagogue might yet be brought to earth, for Brahm Bones was never a man to cry quits.
Brahm bends the horseshoe. At home, Katrina writes an invitation for Ichabod.
It was upon the occasion of her father's annual Halloween frolic that Katrina again chose to stir the embers of the smoldering rivalry. Thus, one invitation in particular carried a most personal and provocative summons.
In the schoolhouse, Ichabod sets down the invitation. Looking in the mirror, he ties up his hair and sings. He smiles at his reflection.
The worthy schoolmaster was in a transport of joy. To him, this could mean but one thing. Ha-ha, Icky, you sly old dog, you. What is this strange power you have over women? Well, tonight's the night, boy.
Ichabod pats his face with chalk powder.
Just turn on the old charm, and the fair Katrina is yours for the asking.
He puts on his hat and grabs his umbrella. Ichabod cheerfully strolls out of the schoolhouse.
So gaily bedecked, nobly mounted upon a horse he had borrowed for the occasion, Ichabod issued forth like a knight-errant of old to keep a tryst with his lady fair.
Ichabod's horse breaks free of its plow and rides off with Ichabod. Nighttime at the farmhouse.
In all the countryside, there was nothing to equal a merrymaking at Mynheer Van Tassel's farm. To Ichabod, here was a perfect field for his endeavors. Now, indeed, would he put his best foot forward. For beyond all his other talents, the schoolmaster prided himself upon his dancing.
Ichabod twirls Katrina as they dance.
The unhappy Brahm, already bested at every turn, saw himself once more outmatched. For as he watched the posturing pedagogue, he was forced to admit that here was a flawless picture of ease and grace.
Without looking at it, Ichabod lights a match. He snags a slice of cake and eats as he dances with Katrina. As he bows, Ichabod extends his foot back, nearly kicking Brahm. Annoyed, Brahm crosses his arms and legs. He notices a short woman sitting alone, twiddling her thumbs. Eyeing Brahm hopefully, she flutters her eyelashes, but Brahm hides his face and shudders. The short woman frowns. Brahm perks up as he watches Ichabod and Katrina dance. He imagines Ichabod dancing with a short woman. Brahm grins and looks at the short woman. She smiles, and Brahm stands and gestures to the dance floor. The short woman charges at Brahm and leads him around the dance floor. Brahm watches Ichabod and Katrina. An older man plays violin as many couples dance. Brahm and his partner cross the room. He passes the short woman to Ichabod and takes Katrina's hands. Ichabod's new partner bounces enthusiastically with him as his rival dances with Katrina. Sneaking between the other pair, Ichabod resumes dancing with Katrina. Brahm wears a frustrated look as the short woman guides him away. Scanning the room, he spots his rival, who stands taller than the rest of the crowd. Brahm picks up his dance partner and hurries across the room. Ichabod and Katrina twirl gracefully between wooden beams. Brom chases them with the shorter woman under his arm. Brom places the shorter woman on a bench, but she latches onto him. He struggles to free himself. Noticing an open door, Brom hurls the short woman through. He sticks a chair under the door handle. Brom hides behind a beam and glares at his rival. Releasing Katrina, Ichabod dances backwards onto a hatch in the floor. Brom smiles, and Ichabod returns to his partner. Brom opens the hatch and sneaks back to the beam. Ichabod hovers near the opening, but returns to Katrina. The short woman enters and waves at Brom. Brom wears a horrified look as she hurries toward him. Brom backs away and falls into the opening. The hatch closes. The short woman looks confused as Ichabod and Katrina dance over the hatch. Outside, Brom emerges from the cellar. He kicks a water bucket off his foot and looks through a window. Inside, Ichabod cartwheels and runs on a pumpkin as he dances. Ichabod kisses Katrina's arm.
There was no doubt that Ichabod was the man of the hour. Brom knew that he must concede his rival still another victory. And yet there was still a chance his time would come. For when the hour grew late, Van Tassel always called upon his guests to tell him ghostly tales of Halloween. And Brom knew there was no more firm and potent believer in spooks and goblins than Ichabod Crane.
Ichabod tosses salt over his shoulder. Brom wears a menacing smile. He talks to the crowd as Ichabod eats.
Just gather round and I'll elucidate on what goes on outside when it gets late.
Long about midnight, the ghosts and banshees, they get together for their nightly jamboree.
There's things with horns and saucer eyes.
Some with fangs about this size.
Some are fat and some are thin.
And some don't even wear their skin.
Oh, I'm telling you, brother, it's a frightful sight to see what goes on Halloween night.
Wind forces the windows open. Ichabod startles and wraps himself in a curtain.
Oh, when spooks have a midnight jamboree, they break it up with fiendish glee. Ghosts are bad, but the one that's cursed is the headless horseman. He's the worst.
That's right, he's the man on Halloween night.
But when he goes a-jogging across the land, holding his noggin in his hand, demons take one look and groan, and they hit the road for parts unknown.
Beware, take care, he rides alone.
And there's no spook like Spook at Spur.
They don't like him and he's really burned.
He swears to the longest day he's dead,
he'll show them that he can get ahead.
Ichabod trembles in fear.
They say he's tired of his flaming top. He's got a yen to make a swap. So he rides one night each year to find a head in the hollow here.
Now he likes them little, he likes them big.
Or in the middle or awake.
Sweat drips down Ichabod's face.
The headless horseman needs a head with a hip, hip, and a clippity-clap. He's out looking for a chop-chop. So don't stop to figure out a plan. You can't reason with a headless man.
Katrina wears an amused look.
Now if you doubt this tale is so, I met that spook just a year ago. Now I didn't stop for a second look, but made for the bridge that spans the brook. But once you cross that bridge, my friend,
the monster's through his power ends.
So when you're riding home tonight, make for the bridge with all your might. He'll be down in the hollow there. He needs your head. Look out! Beware!
With a hip, hip, and a clippity-clop, he's out looking for a head to swap. So don't try to figure out a plan. You can't reason with a headless man.
Ichabod covers an egg in pepper and eats it. Smoke shoots from his ears and he exhales fire. Nighttime in the woods.
It was the very witching hour of night that Ichabod pursued his travel homeward. The sky grew darker and darker as one by one the stars winked out their lights. Driving clouds obscured the moon from sight. Never had the schoolmaster felt so melancholy, so utterly alone. And the nearer he approached the hollow,
the more dismal he became.
Ichabod rides into the dark woods on his horse. The lanky man whistles. He anxiously looks from side to side as he rides ahead. Ichabod pulls on his collar. Head drooping, the horse walks with its eyes closed and stumbles over a tree root. Ichabod startles and his knees shake together. He gazes up at the full moon. Dark, wispy clouds start to hide it from view.
Once inside the murky glen, Ichabod's anxiety increased a hundredfold. For now, the forest seemed to close in behind him. Every small detail of Brahm's awful story returned to haunt his recollection.
Ichabod pats his horse urgently. It trots ahead, briefly increasing speed. The horse slows down again, and Ichabod glances around with a paranoid expression. A flurry of leaves flies at Ichabod. He frantically waves at the leaves and pulls his hat low over his head. Looking side to side, Ichabod pats his horse and they continue on. Ichabod encounters a ghostly figure with glowing eyes. Peering over his horse, he finds the figure to be an oddly shaped tree with fireflies resembling eyes. The glowing insects fly over Ichabod, who drips with sweat. Ichabod's ear swells as he listens to crickets. He climbs back to the saddle. Nearby, an owl sits on a tree branch. Ichabod continues ahead. A shadow shows a croaking frog. Ichabod wipes his sweaty face with a cloth. He nervously squirms. A frog hops into a pond as Ichabod rides across a bridge. Ichabod clutches his head, staring around wide-eyed. Gnarled trees resemble menacing figures. Ichabod hides his head in his jacket and shields his eyes. A branch drops, poking Ichabod. He rides into a spider web. Ravens with red eyes fly toward the graveyard. Ichabod bounces on his horse. A wider view reveals the sleeping animal sitting on a gravestone. Ichabod eyes the horse's unmoving hoof. The terrified man pushes the horse's seat off the gravestone. Ichabod sweats as he struggles to move the large animal. He tries to drag the horse by the reins, but they snap. Ichabod tumbles against a fallen tree trunk. Next to him, cattail plants tap on the trunk. Spotting the cattails, Ichabod smiles in relief. He taps the plant. Ichabod rips off three cattails and knocks his head with them. Nearby, Ichabod's horse opens an eye and smiles. Ichabod walks to his horse and hugs it. Their eyes widen, spotting a dark, headless figure on a rearing stallion. The horseman holds up a fiery head and a sword. Ichabod and his horse duck as the horseman swings at them. They scramble to their feet. Ichabod clings to the horse's legs, then bounces into the saddle as they flee from the pursuing horseman. Ichabod's frightened horse gallops faster. Ichabod falls behind it, holding on by the reins. The fuming stallion nears him. He turns to face it, then spots the horseman swinging his sword at him. Ichabod ducks, then leaps onto his horse and swings around his neck. Ichabod frantically yanks on the horse's noseband. The headless horseman closes in on Ichabod and his horse. The stallion leaps high into the air and over Ichabod. The lanky man looks behind his horse and smiles. Ichabod nuzzles his horse as they unknowingly speed toward the stallion. The headless horseman raises his sword as they pass. Ichabod spots him and ducks. He and his horse tumble down a steep hill into a lake. Under the surface, they ram into a tree. The horse races out of the lake with Ichabod in tow. Down the trail, the headless horseman brandishes his sword as the stallion rears. The horse skids to a stop in front of him, and Ichabod ducks from the horseman's sword. The horseman chases them. Ichabod grabs a tree trunk and swings around with the horse back to the trail.
Once you cross that bridge, my friends, the ghost is through. His power ends.
Ichabod and his horse slide through mud and spin to a stop by a covered bridge. Ichabod's horse runs back into the woods away from the bridge. He spots his pursuer charging toward them. Ichabod collides with the headless horseman and peers into his empty collar.
Yeah!
Ichabod and his horse dodge the horseman's sword. The horseman chases them around a tree. Ichabod hits a branch, spins over it, and lands on the horseman's stallion. Ichabod's horse continues circling around the tree. Ichabod looks back and notices his horse. He hits the branch again and spins back onto his horse. Ichabod races toward the covered bridge with the headless horseman in pursuit. The horseman stops as Ichabod crosses. Ichabod looks back. The horseman throws the fiery head, a jack-o'-lantern, at Ichabod. Daytime, at the covered bridge.
Next morning, Ichabod's hat was found. And close beside it, a shattered pumpkin. But there was no trace of the schoolmaster.
At a church, a bell rings. Inside, Brahm and Katrina stand at the altar.
It was shortly thereafter that Brahm Bones led the fair Katrina to the altar.
In a home, Ichabod dines with a family.
Now, rumors persisted that Ichabod was still alive, married to a wealthy widow in a distant county. But, of course, the good Dutch settlers refused to believe such nonsense, for they knew the schoolmaster had been spirited away by the headless horseman.
The headless horseman sits atop his rearing stallion.
With a hip, hip, and a clippity-clop,
he's out looking for a head to swap. So don't try to figure out a plan. You can't reason with a headless man.
Leaving the library, we view the stained glass window.
Man, I'm getting out of here.
The End. A Walt Disney production. Audio description by WGBH. Voiced by Alan Pintal. Funded by Disney.